Hello and welcome to the Watson Weekly, the weekend edition with Rick and Jess. I'm your host, Rick Watson.
Hey, y'all. I'm Jessica Lisewski. Rick, let's get into the stories. What do we got today?
Today on the show, we have three stories for you. First, Stripe reportedly circling PayPal. This will be interesting. Second is Trump tariffs part deux after the Supreme Court's ruling. And finally, late last week, Walmart reported earnings. We wanted to cover it off in a little bit more detail today, Jess. And so we're going to go through that.
That's right. Do you want to, though, tell people where they can find us before we get into the show?
Yeah, you can find us on WatsonWeekly.com and subscribe to us on YouTube. So we really appreciate all of our subscribers. Hit the like and subscribe button and go and subscribe to the newsletter at WatsonWeekly.com.
That's right. You're not going to want to miss this.
No.
All right. Well, so I'll kick us off here with in PayPal. We are without a captain, Rick, and the ship seems to be sinking and we got sharks circling the waters.
Yes.
So let's break down what happened. So PayPal had their earnings. They fell way short of analyst expectations. Total payment volumes down. Branded checkout growth only to what, 1%, which very lackluster.
Not good.
The CEO's out.
He gone.
Yeah. And so if we kind of look at the saga here, we've got a lot of rotating chairs in the PayPal CEO turnaround. Dan Schulman was there for, you know, almost, well, over a decade. He announced his retirement in 2023. Enter Alex Chriss. He was supposed to be the turnaround champion, did not materialize.
Right.
And take us through now where we are.
Yeah, where we are now is the chairman of the board has taken over. There was a brief stint for a couple of months that the CFO had taken over. And when the chairman of the board takes over the company and they're not from the payments industry, really, he's from HP, he's not from the e-commerce industry or retail, it kind of makes you feel like something's a brewing. The good ship SS PayPal remains a ship without a captain, and the sharks are starting, maybe even the baby sharks are starting a circle. So for all you with kids, you know what I'm talking about. So
lives rent free in your head.
There have been reports that Stripe is looking at assets. And personally, I think the only asset that's really worth their time is really two. One is Venmo, which is still growing at 20%. Kids still love Venmo. It's still a great brand. Unfortunately, the problem that PayPal has, if they didn't pull the Facebook Instagram move and just sort of like, yeah, we have this blue thing over here, but you don't need to worry about it. We're really focused on this new thing we bought. And they just put all of their energy into Instagram.
Yeah.
Venmo is kind of left to the side. It's still growing, but it didn't become the franchise. They still try to. Essentially, what I feel like every time I'm in PayPal, like I'm literally being scammed. So that's really part of the reasons I haven't used PayPal. So Stripe is looking at some assets in PayPal. I don't think they're trying to acquire the whole business. I think they're trying to acquire part of it. Given that Venmo isn't the biggest part of the business, I think that makes sense. PayPal branded checkout is another one. Stripe Link is Stripe's essentially portal to the consumer. So like, Shop Pay really became almost like the version of Stripe in front of the consumer for a Shopify checkout. Stripe Link is kind of that for everything else, anything that needs a payment button. Stripe has been very developer focused and B2B focused in their history, and consumer remains, I don't say it's Achilles heel, but it's definitely an opportunity for development.
Yeah, absolutely. Then you have the whole agentic shopping. You've got PayPal on the front end, Stripe on the back end, PayPal with 400 million accounts. That's a lot of wallets that I'm sure Stripe would love to have data around as they keep trying to prevent fraud. And then tell us about stablecoin and what Stripe's been doing there. Why is PayPal interesting?
Yeah, I mean, look, Stripe has tremendous ambitions, as you could see by them trying to stay in the private markets and essentially be this enormous, you know, multi-billion dollar startup. They create liquidity for employees. I mean, there's just like a whole stock market inside of Stripe, essentially.
Yeah.
And so stablecoin is essentially Stripe's bet to rewire the financial system. So when we went through sort of the crypto blockchain, Bitcoin situation, it didn't really pan out as something that was sort of ready for prime time in the short term. The transactions take too long. They're too expensive. They cost gas. all these problems that they have. Stablecoin is essentially a cryptocurrency that's pegged to what's called fiat currency, which is like the US dollar or like the major currencies. And it's engineered to be very fast. And so the upshot for Stripe is that it bypasses like all the payment processor in the back and the banks and like basically everyone else who's in Stripe's way of world domination.
That's right. And what I think surprised me about this whole story, just really, it's oh, how the mighty have fallen. Yes. I was at eBay when PayPal essentially called eBay the boat anchor around its neck. And now for the first time in a very long time, we have eBay's market cap outperforming PayPal's market cap, which I don't think I would have had that on my bingo card.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest challenge we have. I mean, certainly eBay being more valuable than PayPal is a big challenge for them. How is Stripe going to finance this deal? And of course, regulatory roadblocks, which you can't really predict with this administration. Are they for big business? Are they against big business? I think there are factions within both parties that are on both sides of the issue.
Yeah.
Clearly, during the last administration, a lot of big acquisitions got kiboshed. So it remains to be seen that even if this could happen, I think Stripe would try to keep it as small as possible to get the most valuable piece so that it would stay under the radar. That's our PayPal story.
Well, and it's a good segue when we talk about administration. We have got the Trump tariff redo, the sequel, part two.
It's a little bit challenging to understand like how we are not in 2025 anymore and still talking about tariffs. But just to catch you up, Supreme Court recently on February 20th has nullified IEEPA tariffs and says that the president lacks the authority to essentially raise money through taxes. There's no, you know, part of the majority opinion essentially is that like there's zero part of tariffs and taxation that resides with the executive branch, which is a pretty clear statement, even through some of the judges that Trump himself appointed.
Yeah.
And so he was pretty like not too pleased about that one. He pivoted quickly to sort of a temporary measure, as sometimes he does. There's like a 150-day Section 122 worldwide tariff, which started at 10%. Now he mentions 15%. It's hard to know, like when they tweet something, is it the official policy? Is it just something? Did he have a bad night of sleep?
Definitely someone pee-peed in his cornflakes.
Exactly. So he was very upset at the Supreme Court. And so businesses don't have the opportunity to experience and change from what happened a year ago. Kevin O'Leary is freaking out on CNN. I mean, that was a funny video to see if you've seen circulating around. But if you're a business, how do you think about this, Jess?
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit hard to get your head around because it's somewhat whiplash. And in Kevin O'Leary's world, he's talking about so many people knocking on the doors, asking for refunds and money back. And, you know, I think people can have this freak out moment. You've got FedEx, you know, suing. There's Costco, HMTX Industries, Bumblebee Foods. Like the people are coming out of the woodwork saying, well, thanks, Supreme Court. Now it's time to get ours. And so
Gimme.
And it is, I think, tough to get your head around what's going to happen. But you've talked about this a lot. You know, now is not necessarily the time to go turtle shell mode and like duck and run, right? You've kind of have to stay steady and stay the course and continue to weather the storm.
I mean, the nice good news, bad news about last year is we've lived through this.
Right.
We thought at the beginning of the year when tariffs goes up, the prices would go up and then consumer would essentially stay on the sidelines. That didn't happen last year. And so businesses already have a playbook for how this might play out. They have a very close comparable year over year, in fact. And so it'll be interesting to see those year over year comps, depending on the tariffs play out. But our advice for retailers and brands is to really stay the course. Like you went into 2026 optimistic about the consumer. We'll talk about the consumer in Walmart in a second in our next story. But essentially what we're saying is last year was for turtle shells. This year is for people that are being bold. We talked about it in our NRF keynote. And where businesses are going to succeed in 2026 is really by taking those calculated risks and not just assuming that, well, this is a new thing. We're going to wait and see. We're going to recalculate everything. We're going to put merchandising. We're going to stop acquiring products and landing products. Give that job to your CFO and your head of procurement and supply chain, but don't hamstring your merchants and your marketers and your people who are investing in new technology initiatives.
That's right. Cutting your marketing budget is not going to help you with growth.
Exactly. So there are a lot of people worried about this, but stay the course and we will keep it on.
Well, let's get into our more in-depth story. Last week, we talked about Walmart and its $1 trillion climb. And this week, we wanted to spend a little bit more time unpacking the earnings since we didn't have a chance to go into that and talk about what Walmart is saying for outlook, how that relates to the economy and what we're seeing from a consumer perspective, and then also where they're really positioned from a competitive defense now versus Amazon. And so let's unpack that story.
Just to, you know, to catch you up, Walmart had another great earnings. They predicted, you know, something like 4% growth of this year and operating income growth between 6 and 8% for the full year. CapEx is kind of in line. You know, they remodeled something like 600 stores last year, and I expect them to continue on that pace this year. Their margins are increasing. 1/3 of their operating profit is now from membership and ads, which is a huge change from their business model. And would love to like unpack the consumer for a second, because Walmart talked about two tiers of consumers. So that those less than 50,000 and then over 100,000.
Mm-hmm. So John Furner, the new CEO, really harped on this a lot. It's a kind of a tale of two worlds, tale of two cities. You have that less than 50K consumer that they've been seeing some of that wallet shrinking, and they're saying, look, these people are living paycheck to paycheck. We heard that come out in the earnings last year as well. Really, that higher income consumer, those people making more than 100,000, is what's driving and fueling a lot of that growth. And we know that they've been taking share from Costco. They've been taking share from Target, as not just people are looking to pinch pennies, but people are looking for selection where they went to a Target store, the shelves were empty. Guess what? Walmart more than likely had it in stock. And so that's really what's driving and fueling a lot of the growth on the consumer side.
And as you look at the, you know, the lower income consumers are living paycheck to paycheck, still the higher income consumers are driving the bulk of the growth that Walmart has had. Meanwhile, both sets of consumers really value convenience.
That's right.
And as we get into the sort of the next part of the story, Walmart has become a sneaky, good supply chain operator. Now, Walmart's always been great at supply chain. They pioneered really automated inventory counts and checking, even like as far back as the 80s. Their stores have been always notoriously well run. They dropped a few sort of truth bombs as part of their earnings, which I thought were funny. It's like 50% of e-commerce fulfillment is now automated, and a big percentage of their stores are now receiving freight from automated distribution centers. And so this allows them to be more efficient, sort of cut humans out of the loop a little bit, lower their cost to serve. Those were big things. Some of the category standouts were also interesting. Fashion was one I noticed, Jess.
Yeah, it was pretty nuts to see. You know, Walmart, I don't think we've ever necessarily put in the category of fashion extraordinaire, but they certainly have been taking that playbook from Target. They've been doing collaborations, they've been doing drops, and it's absolutely paying off. They've been leaning into influencers to talk about, like, look at my Walmart haul, similar to what you would see with a Shein haul.
There's a Walmart haul, Jess?
There is a Walmart haul, yes. Okay. Yes. I mean, they did something with Scoop NYC. So they're bringing back some of these brands too, which is pretty interesting. Hmm. And then I thought this was a unique stat for Walmart. You know, we know that grocery's always been strong for them, but their grocery penetration reached a record-breaking 72%. And
Whoa.
That is up 6 points from a year-over-year perspective. So they really are beating out so many other grocers in terms of growth. And again, kind of a nod to the consumer sentiment, you're also seeing dollar stores growing faster than even some of the Costco's and some of the warehouse stores in grocery. And so it was just interesting that Walmart has now, we knew they were been dominant in grocery, but they've really kind of laid the hammer and the gauntlet down of like, we're really owning this category.
Yeah. And I think there are a couple of, I hadn't heard that 72% grocery penetration. That's bonkers. I want to talk about agentic commerce for a second. Yeah. That's something else Walmart's investing in. Everyone is looking for the signs that agentic commerce is going to be the new salvation. There's so much VC institutional money going into agentic commerce. It seems to be the only story in retail right now.
Right.
You know, I was sufficiently whelmed with Walmart's news about agentic commerce, they mentioned people that use Sparky has 35% higher AOV. Sparky is sort of the antidote to Amazon Rufus. It's sort of the agentic search engine. Sparky. Yeah, that's, we only have dogs. Yeah. So Target is going to come up with Fido. Just watch. Leading to larger AOV. Again, the question is it just being overlaid? Is it incremental GMV? Is it growing that much faster? Walmart's e-commerce growth seems pretty steady. And so what percentage of consumers? Definitely, I think they have a lot of adoption. They're shifting to be more of a technology platform company. And quite a number of people are still adopting Walmart fast shipping. They can now cover 95% of America in less than 3 hours.
That's huge. That's what you're talking about. The difference, Amazon has warehouses. Walmart has stores that really operate as warehouses, and they are so close to the consumer in ways that really no other retailer has that type of reach. And there's all of these various methods that you can operate in or leverage as a consumer. You have Express, which is less than 3 hours. That's a $10 fee with a delivery fee. You have in-home, curbside, and then your regular kind of shipping. And Walmart's doing something pretty sneaky. Speaking from a consumer perspective, they for sure are leaning into surprise and delight. I ordered some furniture, been redoing my rooms, and you know, they were like, it's going to take up to 12 days and it's like shipping less than a week. And so I think they're also trying to like not necessarily overpromise and under deliver, but you know, essentially try to get a surprise and delight for the customer, which you're like, oh, okay, I'm going to come back again because that shipping was way faster than I thought.
That shipping component is a big part of Walmart's strategy. They've determined that people will order more frequently. Again, all these are parts of Amazon's playbook. Their marketplace is still growing well. Their ads business, which we didn't talk, grew something like, you know, in the mid-40s this year. They mentioned that between their first party and their third party sellers, a third party, meaning their marketplace, customer or sellers are actually making up the bulk of their ads growth. So it's not your traditional retail media people who's trying to get placement in shelves and sort of like trading trade dollars, you know, online. It's these marketplace sellers that are trying to boost their sales and marketplace search engine. And this is helping Walmart's inventory costs, despite the fact that Walmart grew about 4.5% and their operating income grew about 6-ish%, their inventory only grew about 2.5%. And I like one of the most interesting things that I heard on the call was that Walmart felt that maybe there was like an analyst question, like it kind of begs the question that could they have grown faster, but for the inventory levels that they purchased, it seems like they underbought slightly just to hedge against the fact that maybe it wasn't going to be a fantastic holiday season. And I think they surprised themselves a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, that was kind of one of the plays was like, hey, we need to control our costs. We need to manage inventory. But do you think they left some money on the table because they could have potentially had more opportunity?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say how much, maybe, you know, 300 basis points or something like that. So nothing too crazy, but it's definitely something that I think when I looked at guidance, particularly for Q1, it seemed pretty muted. Mm-hmm. And they almost felt like they were smiling behind the answers that they were giving analysts, meaning like, we're going to beat these numbers. We're going to give you these numbers. They're going to be low and we're going to beat these numbers.
A little sandbagging action.
Yeah, a little sandbagging never hurt no one.
Again, surprise. That's part of their MO.
Yeah, just like your new Walmart kitchen.
That's right. Absolutely. So things are really working out well for Walmart, Rick. Do you think they need to tweak the playbook? Do they stay the course? Or do they have to kind of come up with the next thing? Because as we know, investors are like, thank you, sir. May we have another?
Yeah. I mean, I think Walmart is in a transition point and they've come up with a few different things. Number one is they just had a major leadership transition. So that needs to sink in first. So John Furner is a new CEO. He's obviously been with Walmart forever. They have very long tenured leaders. Seth Dallaire is one of the newest ones who came from Instacart and then Amazon and Microsoft and all these advertising businesses that he's built. He was previously the chief growth officer for Walmart US. Now he's for all of Walmart globally. And so he has a perch there that I think a lot of people don't appreciate. He was sort of John Furner's right-hand person in the Walmart US, and now that has escalated globally. What that means is it's going to be a lot more of the same, and so they're going to try to replicate that playbook in China, in Mexico, in South America, and a lot. Walmart has a lot of growth market in India. They have a lot of growth markets that I think have a lot more potential. You know, their second biggest ads market is actually India through Flipkart. Mm-hmm. They have a big payments phone pay solution in India that's been growing quickly. Markets in South America like Argentina and Chile have been growing a lot, particularly with like phone-based agentic commerce, those sorts of things. I think those experiments will continue to get pushed throughout the world. Walmart is not the kind of company that goes and does something completely new and bold outside of the realm like Amazon does, like an AWS or like let's try a Fire Phone or something like this. Walmart is like a retailer through and through. It saw that Amazon had parts of the playbook that it needed to borrow after, literally Amazon stole Walmart's first playbook just to learn how to be a retailer. And so the tables have turned here. But I expect more of the same. I do expect them to continue to explore more high margin businesses. So I wouldn't be surprised if data is a focus. How could they monetize their data better? But that's kind of where I stand right now on the Walmart growth levers.
Yeah. And when you dig into the Q&A, you know, and kind of underpin like what does Walmart feel about the future, they did say, look, there's substantial uncertainty. Yeah. We don't know what's going to happen in the global economy, tariffs, resilience of low income shoppers, which if there is any, I'd say Achilles heel for Walmart, it is there. While we talked about the growth of the 100K plus consumer and that really driving and fueling, their bread and butter has always been that lower income consumer. So if there is more pressure there, that could create some headwinds for them. And they're trying to signal that. But where do you feel like Walmart really stands this year? Will it be another banger of a year?
Yeah, I think it'll be another good year. I mean, there are some consumer worries, but I don't see that many big ones on the horizon. Walmart had navigated the tariff situation pretty beautifully last year. Yeah. And so I'm very bullish on the management team in particular. This leadership transition has gone super well and smoothly. And so I'm excited about Walmart is looking at this year. So
that's right. It's Wally's world. We're just living in it.
Exactly.
All right. Well, that's kind of wrapping up where we are today, and hope you guys have enjoyed this episode. Again, if you like, subscribe, tell your friends.
Stay bold, stay classy, and see you next week.
Have a great weekend.
Bye.
Bye.